morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Springtime in Arizona is a wonder, isn't it? This is it. This is the best time to be alive and in Arizona. March is the month, so they say. Some people could argue April, but I think March is it. It's beautiful out there. We're going to talk about lots of things this morning. We're going to talk about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, just the lightning rod of the Democratic Party. The name of the show is Democratic Perspective. We're going to talk about this electric Democrat that seems to be doing all sorts of things. But we also want, we would be remiss, we do want to talk about the Cohen test. This is a really, 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 really big deal, having Trump's ex-lawyer go before Congress and testify. And there's so much to talk about, as we try to say on Democratic Perspective all the time. There's so much, and it's so easy to go in 85 directions at once, which is certainly what I do. But we're going to try to sort things out for you this morning. We do want to mention that Democratic Perspective would love to have an intern. We want to say this right at the top because I always forget at the end. We need somebody to video these sessions and put them live on our wonderful underused Facebook page. Democratic Perspective has a Facebook page. Democratic Perspective has a Twitter page. We don't. Yes, that's right. That's right. My co-host.
Klaus just looked at me and
so into a we do? Didn't know that. We do. We do. I had somebody call me the other day wondering how they could donate, and I told them immediately there's a donate button on the VVID website, the Verde Valley Independent Democrat website.
We should introduce ourselves.
That's a good idea.
Mike Cosentino is taking the lead today because Steve is in absentia.
As we say, flying left seat. I'm in the pilot seat, so you guys better be good. I'm going to do it.
Okay, Mike is going to give it another try. Let's hear this.
Klaus Van. See, now the other thing, doing the accent is racist, by the way. If you do like.
No, you can do a German accent. Okay, that's not racist.
Klaus Van Studerheim is here. Von Studerheim. Klaus Van Studerheim is here.
Bravo, Michael.
Thank you. That's right. How do you say it in Italian? Yeah. Gary LeMaster.
My last day in Arizona for a while, and you're talking about how wonderful March is in Arizona, which you're absolutely right, and I'm going back to about 4 feet of snow in Minnesota. So.
Yeah, we're doing a little Chamber of Commerce show here, and that's fine. 1 degree below zero, I hear.
How about we talk about some politics?
Let's do it. So, what do you want?
Let's start out by recapping what happened last week, because it was a pretty monumental week.
Pretty monumental week.
We had Trump's longtime fixer and personal lawyer for 10 years testify before the House Oversight Committee and began the testimony by saying, and by the way, he has nothing to lose. He's already going to jail. If he lies during testimony, he only gets more time in jail. So there's no incentive for him to lie about his dear leader. And so he started out his testimony by calling Trump a racist, a cheat, and a con man. Mm. And then he went on to substantiate it. And so it was quite entertaining, I thought.
Well, it was more than entertaining. It was I find it really hard to believe that 4 out of 10 Republicans still support the sociopath, lying con man that occupies the Oval Office.
Four of ten? I thought it was more like 95%, wasn't it? I mean, they're all going.
80% say they support him. 4 out of 10 say they'll vote for him.
One of the interesting things that came out of that testimony, the Democratic lightning rod AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez,
yes,
managed to be very buttoned up, and instead of trying to make points, right, political points, actually asked some substantial questions, and kind of shone a light on some other people to bring in for testimony, including Trump's financial guru. And then as a result of that, yesterday Congressman Nadler was on some Sunday shows, and there are now about 60 more directions for investigations into the Trump administration.
I was never quite sure about Alexandria from the beginning. Was she flaky? I mean, it was, and some of the stuff she put out early on about the Green New Deal seemed hasty. So I didn't quite know what to think of her, but when I saw her interrogate Cohen, I was very, very impressed. She was very precise. She cut down to the chase, and most importantly, she got a lot of names out of him that will lead to further investigation. By the way, I should also say that Jerry Nadler is an old friend of mine from the Upper West Side, and he's doing a terrific job.
You have good friends.
Yeah, that's Klaus just said, Cortez's analytical interrogation of Cohen yielded some a path to Trump's financial records. We're talking over 2 years in office. We still haven't seen this guy's tax returns. Some states, as they should, are passing laws that you can't get on the ballot unless you show us your tax return, of the minimal thing that you need of the leader of this part of the world and most of the rest. You would, especially in a guy like Trump with so many foreign contacts, so many irons in the fire, so many cons, so many unpaid workmen, so many, all the other things that he does illegally. You need to see these things. And she let us, as Lawrence O'Donnell said on his show Last Word Tonight, is all those names, those people better be buttoning up. The subpoenas are coming.
Yes.
The subpoenas are on the way.
It's amazing to me with following AOC. I didn't know anything about her before she won her congressional seat. But before she even gets to Congress, the Republicans are already attacking her because she had a dance video when she was younger.
Yes, it was cute.
And she's cute. So they all seem just utterly fascinated by her. And the attacks began about how she dressed and where she lived and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And she has proven to be equal to the task of the attacks.
They call her a bartender from New York. It's true that she worked as a bartender. But she also has a degree from Boston University in economics and forget what the other thing was, but it was economics and I think political science.
Political science. And that's it. I think the I want to read the background of her, that the she's really is our topic as far as I'm concerned this morning. And what I want to get out is that, okay, what if and I said this earlier, if Hillary had answered her detractors, and you know, as you guys have said, the right-wing media is all over this. Even the left-wing media is all over this. The Washington Post, the New York Times, the Boston Globe are all examining this left-of-center congresswoman. And yet, in my opinion, the Democratic Party really needs to embrace Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
She owns it.
She is the future of the Democrat. First of all, she's a Democrat. We've had people like Charles Schumer and whatnot for all of this time, which a lot of people say, boy, Democrat. And this is why the young people say, there's no difference. What, are you kidding me? Democrats, Republicans, they're all the same. They're all bought, paid for, and the media will back that
by
up.
By big corporations.
So far, anyway, Bernie and now this young woman certainly have inspired.
The thing I love about it is she's been attacked immediately for being too young and too inexperienced to be in Congress. But it was pointed out to me that she is roughly the same age, I think maybe a bit older than Ryan was, Paul Ryan was when he, you know, was elected to Congress. And, you know, the only reason she's being attacked is because she's cute and she's a woman.
Let me read this from the Wall Street Journal. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez leads a generation of young people to take pride, that take pride in their ignorance of the laws of nature, of history, of the Constitution, of the eternal battle for freedom, and still succeed. Alexandria answered the Wall Street Journal, I guess the Wall Street Journal editorial page takes pride in their ignorance of our nation's history, of slavery, Jim Crow, and mass incarceration. Willful doubt on the decades of science on climate change, targeting of indigenous peoples, and the classiest punitive agenda targeting working families. So she shoots all this back to the Washington Journal within minutes of her, and this is what needs to be done.
Exactly.
There's one issue that's troublesome, I think, and this will have to be sorted out. She and Bernie are not just left of center. They are on the left. And the number of seats that we won by Democratic candidates who are more towards the middle, because that's what the district looks like. And as you all know, there was a rather strident debate behind closed doors in which AOC almost assaulted these the more middle-of-the-road Democrats and threatened them. And it's something we have to think about carefully as Democrats who want to win. We don't want to score ideological points. We want to win. And it's dangerous to push those who need to be more middle-of-the-road into the left corner or threaten them with primaries. So there's still some work to be done, and I'm impressed with her, but she also needs to think further than her ideological views.
Absolutely. There's a lot, our Democrat, and I think this is good for, this is what we do. The Republicans don't do this. They do lockstep. They do fascism really well. Democrats argue with each other. This is what they do. We go in different directions. There's an article in a website called Hot Air. A lot of people are complaining and expressing concerns about the Democratic Party being portrayed as socialist and that certain voices are louder than others. And he's talking about our friend here, Alexandria. And there's a lot of people that suck up all the oxygen. Don't always specify who that is.
Let's examine the division of the Democrats, if I could.
Hang on for 1 minute. Okay. I just want to interject this. You guys know the old joke, how Democrats form a firing squad, right?
Yeah, circular firing squad, okay. Sure.
Well, that's where I was going, is that for many, many years, as long as I can remember, actually, Democrats have been running to the middle.
That's
more
right.
And more and more to the middle.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Republicans have been running further and further and further to the right, year after year, election after election. And you get this unequal examination of the two parties, where the media always portrays the two as, you know, the Democrats are always running further to the left and the Republicans are running further to the right, and we need somebody in the middle. We've had people in the middle for decades. And that's where the Democrats have been. The Republicans abandoned that long ago. That was called the Rockefeller Republicans.
That's right.
And they abandoned that in the 1970s, and they have been running further and further right, but the media continues to accuse the Democrats for going left. It's refreshing to have people like AOC and others come in that actually are to the left. And I think eventually, you know, in 2016, they talked about how the Republican Party was hopelessly divided going into the election and Trump could never win. And I think there's no reason to believe that Democrats can't argue this out, debate it out in the primaries and come to an agreement and defeat Trump in 2020.
I agree. And let me set the record straight on Cortez. Let me read you a little thing here from Facebook. This woman won second prize in the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair with a microbiology research project on the effect of antioxidants on the lifespan of nematode C. In a show of appreciation for her efforts, the International Astronomical Union named a small asteroid after her. In high school, she took part in the National Hispanic Institute's Lorenzo de Zavala, the LDZ Youth Legislative Session. She later became the LDZ Secretary of State while she attended Boston University. Ocasio-Cortez had a John F. Lopez Fellowship. During college, she served as an intern in the immigration office during the final year of U.S. Senator Ted Kennedy's tenure. She graduated cum laude from Boston University's College of Arts and Sciences in 2011, majoring in international relations and economics.
Don't you know that education is a bad thing to do? You know, we don't believe scientists and anybody who's educated. We want to go. It's a race to the bottom, Mike.
It's how we build a good libtard.
The reason I wanted to talk about AOC today is we want to get to the Green New Deal.
Yes.
But before we get there, I think she becomes such a central figure because she's behind the Green New Deal. But she is obviously being the target, has become the target of the Republican Party for 2020. And as evidenced in that great conglomeration of extremists called CPAC that includes, it's the Conservative Political Action Committee that comprised of ultra-right-wing evangelicals, of white nationalists, and now all of the Trump Republicans.
In other words, all the bad people you can think of.
Yes. And so, she became the central topic. She and her supposed socialism became the central topic of CPAC. And I always wonder why, by the way, the media covers CPAC so extensively and never covers anything similar on the left. But, it ended with a rambling 2-hour plus speech by our dear leader after he humped the American flag as he came on stage. And he spent his 2 hours touching on everything from going back to revisit the size of his inaugural crowd, the biggest ever, to the fake news, to the Mueller investigation, no collusion, to the wall, be very afraid of immigrants. They're coming. To socialism, be even more afraid of Democrats. So, and all of that is tied up and wrapped up in AOC. She is now the focal point of that.
So I have a couple of thoughts. One of them is they've managed to demonize Hillary Clinton and,
well, she was the topic of his speech, too.
And the speaker, of the House, whose name is, why can't I think of it?
Nancy Pelosi.
Of course, Nancy Pelosi. And when you look at both of those, Pelosi and Hillary, then unless you really, and unless you're a fervent Democrat, they don't really warm you up. I admired Nancy Pelosi terrifically, but she doesn't exude warmth, and I can understand that a lot of people don't like her. I think they're going to have a harder, the point I'm trying to make is that I think they're going to have a much harder time with Alexandria because she's charming, she's vivacious, she's easy on the eye. It's going to be much harder to demonize a 20-year-old girl than some of the older women.
One of the congressmen says, my main gripe about AOC is that while I respect her voice in the party, and this was good to read, by the way. This is another congressman, John Anzola. While I respect her voice in the party, I don't think she respects mine or anyone else's who differs from her on policy or comes from a different political electoral reality. And this is what you guys are talking about. She has a different – her district will elect someone like her and someone that's – progressive.
She is a perfect representative of her district.
And I think of her generation.
Yeah, I agree.
At least of Democrats. And of, there's a group here in Sedona called Sedona XYZ. We've had them on the show. although they're in business and they are careful, and I think, and like a lot of business people for that matter, you have a political perspective in private, and you have a public political perspective. And because you're in business and because you have to deal with other people that may not have your political perspective. But point is that so many of them, at least from looking at the products, certainly have, would agree more with Alexandria than certainly all the hate and all the division and all the ugliness. So CPAC is, what'd you call them? It's a meeting of white supremacists.
It's a circus.
It's a circus. That's right.
A very, very depressing circus.
I could use some other terms
to describe it, but we're on the radio.
So.
And it is, but I want to underscore what you said about the coverage. This is a bunch of fringe ideas. You know, it's fine. This is the United States. They can do whatever they want. They could stick pins in microphones, you know, and hate on. But the nationwide opening bell to closing speech coverage is the part that I don't get. Why do we have to be exposed? Why are we? I just don't. Other than a media, a Sinclair Media and a Fox Media that says this is news.
But even the other media, you know, all of the so-called liberal media covers it too because of the sensationalism, I suppose. But many of the speakers there are outright, you know, recognized white nationalists, white supremacists.
Right.
And you know, it's these people are leaders of hate groups.
Right.
That are acknowledged hate groups, and they're being, you know, held up as something really special and as an important faction in politics. They should be shunned to the side.
That's nuts. Let's get to the Green New Deal.
We'll lead into it by talking about the elephant in the room, the thing that they're really going to use a broad brush to paint AOC and the Green New Deal. With the term socialism, you're going to hear socialism,
yes.
Socialism,
yes.
Socialism, yeah. For the next year and a half, 2 years, and so let's, you know, Klaus is an expert on being, having come from Germany, and being very familiar with social democracy.
Right. Well, I grew up, and as some of you know, I grew up in Berlin, so I saw real socialism on the other side of the wall, and it wasn't exactly a fun ride. What Americans don't understand, and Bernie certainly doesn't understand, Alexandria perhaps does, is that there's a difference between socialism and social democracy. Socialism is a intermediate step to communism from capitalism, according to Marx, and it means public ownership of the means of production. Social democrats, on the other hand, are what Bernie is really talking about, which is the which is how the society is structured in Western Europe and I know Germany particularly well, which means a high safety net. Nobody goes hungry. A year of work paid if you have a newborn baby, free health insurance, free college education. There's more that I can't think of, but things that seem impossible in America, yet are practiced in the most successful economies around the world. Oh, and this is very important, actually, a much more equal society in which you don't have these huge gaps between the rich and the poor. We're basically at this stage of the game where America was in the 1930s with huge gaps between the haves and the have-nots. And then the Great New Deal came in. And this is something nobody's really talking about, but I think it's really important because FDR, of course, was in a position to do almost anything he wanted because the country was so desperate. But income taxes, where the top bracket was 90%. So it doesn't make any sense for a corporate executive to make $120 million because they just go out of the window to the government. And the inheritance tax was, if I remember correctly, 60%. So even if you passed on great wealth, again, a lot of it got cut off. And for the next generation and a half, America was a fairly equal society until Reagan started to cut taxes. And everybody, including Democrats, fell in step behind him. And we're back at the end of the 1920s.
Which has cost us, by the way, one in five American children have food insecurity. Food insecurity is a word that I really, really dislike. We're talking about one in five American children are hungry. They don't know where their next meal is coming from. That's food insecurity.
And without the SNAP program and schools.
Which Republicans want to cut constantly.
My cousin is a teacher in the middle of Nebraska, a high school teacher. And he tells me about 75% of the students in his school would not have a good meal, a single good meal a day. And this is a farming community. A single good meal a day, if it wasn't for the school lunch program and the paid lunches in school.
I believe it.
Think about that for us. In the heart of America, where a lot of the food is grown and raised, you have a huge percentage of people that can't, you know, that don't know where their next meal is coming from and wouldn't if it wasn't for help from others.
And the question this raises, which has, of course, always puzzled me, people like that yet will vote Republican for reasons that are hard to understand. And maybe Alexandria, with her emphasis of indigenous people and poor people and so on, maybe she'll awaken them up to the fact that these people are not acting in their interest.
Well, that's the point, I think. As some Democrats are saying, and as they should, and as I'm going to say, that her voice is important, but the media circus. I mean, she was getting into a van yesterday, and this is all over social media, and the van gets 17 miles to the gallon, so they're freaking out about how, you know, this environmentally aware, conscious fighter of in Congress got into such a low-mileage vehicle. Now, she immediately posted it was her aunt's van, and she was being picked up by her tia. And she said, if you saw all the goldfish laying around, you would have thought I was anti-seafood.
And if you want to talk about hypocrites, you know, if accusations of hypocrisy,
exactly.
Let's look at the entire Republican Party, every elected official, it's most especially the liar in chief in the White House. You know,
That's it. It's such a scary So the other thing that's going to be happening is, and then various people who follow this will either check in or check out. Oh, well, I can't listen to her anymore because, you know, she drives, or at least a member of her family drives an old van, or she has a big carbon footprint because she's flying from New York to California. I mean, excuse me, New York to D.C. and all this stuff. I mean, it's every aspect of her life is going to be examined from an environmental
point. And I think we should we'd be remiss if we don't talk about the type of, you know, Klaus has touched on it, the type of social democracy that she's proposing and Bernie and others are proposing. We already have a number of programs in this country that fit in that description.
Which what description?
Of being social, you know, socialism or so, you know, if you want
not
to label
socialism.
It, it's social democracy. But there are programs like Social Security.
Yeah. You know, very important, by the way.
And that the Republicans were violently opposed to.
And Medicare, which again, they were violently opposed to. I came from a farm in Iowa. We didn't have electricity until there was a rural electric cooperative, which was a form of this kind of social democracy. Your food co-op in cities is a program that meets that criteria. The VA benefits, you know, all the GI benefits, VA benefits all fall under that.
Well, all of military life is socialism.
So if you're so opposed to this idea, then I suggest that you drop your insurance policy, because that's a form of, you're going to be on your own if your house burns. Mm. You know, it's personal responsibility, right? You're not going to shove that cost off onto others. So I would get rid of that. I would get rid of the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're on your own with your garden hose. Mm-hmm. I'd get rid of the police department and all law enforcement. And, you know, Arizona's kind of already there. Everybody's got a gun.
Whoa. But,
so Montana, too.
But you know, it's
a lot of hardworking cops out there, ladies and gentlemen. Go ahead.
So there's so many programs built into our country from the very beginning that fit under this umbrella. And so, you know, it's when they say socialism, it's not communism. It's not mutually exclusive with capitalism. It is just a way of helping others and trying to give everybody the benefit of living in this great country.
Well, e pluribus unum. I mean, you know, that's what we do. You know, the greatest good for the greatest number. All of these things have kind of gone away to In God We Trust and this, as far as I'm concerned, maniacal American rugged individualism. Somehow the individual rights have become my right to carry 4,000, a gun with a magazine of 400 rounds is more important than the safety of school children.
Speaking of school children, one thing we haven't touched on, but it's very, very important, is education, right? Money for education has been consistently cut, and college tuition has gone up astronomically. One of the big advantage that America had over the rest of the world is that they were the first nation that required 12 years of schooling. And America had a very educated workforce when other countries didn't. And that was part of why America did so well in the 20th century. But that's not the case anymore. Education is an easy thing for Republicans to cut because it doesn't seem to hurt anybody because their children go to private school. But it's done terrible things to American families in general, and also economically to our productivity.
It's slowly taking away the American dream. I look at the new motto.
It's gone for a lot of people. It's not slowly.
Right.
I look at the new motto for America that was put in place in the 1956, In God We Trust, that replaces, Mike said, the E Pluribus Unum, which is, you know, out of many one. And I look at it as In God We Trust is simply a prayer because you're on your own. You know, with that mentality, you're on your own. And so you have to pray for somebody to come help you out.
Well, that's it. The success of the United States, E Pluribus Unum, out of many one. We are immigrants. We are refugees. This is who we are. And so to have this hate. It's just talk about self-hate. I don't know. The analysis here goes on forever. But on my list this morning, by the way, was we want to talk, mention the summit, Gary. You wanted to talk about, speaking of, CPAC was crazy enough. Talk about the crazy summit.
I almost forgot that, you know, you had the meeting of the two dear leaders, the two dictators, Kim of North Korea and the dictator wannabe Trump of the U.S. And what was really, I mean, it ended up in nothing. You know, it was a big summit that was hoping to lead to denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
Of North Korea.
I think South Korea
has plenty of nukes.
The American nukes. But it was less than nothing, right?
Yes.
It wasn't just nothing, it was less than nothing.
And so they ended up, abruptly walking away from the summit. And so Trump comes out, our administration comes out and tells us that they just couldn't reach an agreement. Sometimes you just have to walk away.
Right.
And the fact checkers who reported on the summit and looked into it actually aligned behind Kim's account of the summit, in which he was offering to give up their largest nuclear facility in exchange for removing the most recent sanctions put on North Korea. And, Trump, advised by John Bolton, who is a ultra right wing warmonger, in my view,
yes,
wanted, everything, get rid of all of the any part of your nuclear program And then we'll talk about, you know, relieving the sanctions. It was just a, you know, if you put yourself in Kim's place, why would you do that?
And what the report sounded like to me is that Trump was so distracted by Cohen, even though he is claiming not to be, that and Bolton is whatever. Maybe they were all distracted or didn't realize what the offer was. That it wasn't, they weren't asking to lift sanctions going back decades. All they wanted was lifting of, according to reports, the accurate reports. And it's, so we had to go to the dictator, the murderous dictator, to get the truth.
That's the saddest part is that, you know, certainly I don't hold Kim up as any good.
No.
You know, I mean, he's a thug and runs this horrible, you know, government. But it's pretty alarming when he's more trustworthy in his account of a summit than our own president.
But that brings in the whole Cohen thing. Listen, this is it's taken us 50 minutes to get to.
Still want to get to the Green New Deal.
Yes, we still want.
We got 10 minutes for that.
Yeah, listen, we want to talk. Okay, we're gonna. We do want to mention that we did talk a little bit about the Cohen testimony.
Yeah.
But even it and how much it affected the and but even its effect on the summit that Trump left the country for. This wasn't an accident that these things were scheduled at the same time. And even Trump supporters have to see this. That he was out of the country during one of the most important moments of, I think, his life.
They don't see anything, anything bad about it. His supporters will never admit anything bad about it. They'll question his character, but they like what he's doing.
Let's talk about the Green New Deal.
Let's talk about, you know, briefly about climate change. We just had another major weather event in Alabama, you know, yesterday that killed 24 people, I think, the latest count, and had put a lot of other people in the hospital. And these things are occurring more and more often. Last year we had, I don't remember how many, crises and, weather-related, climate-related crises. You have to distinguish between weather and climate. But climate-related crises in the U.S., it costs us $100 billion. The fires in California, the hurricane, in Florida, the hurricane in Houston, the hurricane in Puerto Rico, and we've hardly dealt with that. And
fires in Montana, don't forget.
Yes, and fires all over the West. And these are occurring more and more frequently because of the global warming.
Can you sum up the Green New Deal?
Pardon?
Can you sum up the Green New Deal?
Yeah.
What is it?
We can get into it. Well, it's as Klaus said before the show, as we were talking about it, it's more aspirational. There are not a lot of details to it.
Ah.
The Republicans are, I mean, there are aspirational goals over the next 10 years. And the way to look at it is at least we're talking about doing something to address climate change in this country.
Well, that's important. But it's important to know that there's not a lot of details. It's important to know that it's aspirational, that it isn't necessarily hardcore.
It's not a blueprint of policy.
Thank you.
It's not going to, as the Republicans said at CPAC, it's not going to take away, they were saying it's going to take away your pickup truck
and your hamburger
and your way of life.
There you go.
It's not going to do any of those things.
I don't get the hamburger part.
It's because of the methane from cattle.
Oh, yes.
which is a huge problem, but we don't have to eliminate suddenly all of the cattle in the world and take away hamburgers to address climate.
If you read through the actual resolution, a lot of it deals with climate change.
Where did this resolution originate?
Well, it's Alexandria's.
Okay.
And it's co-sponsored by Senator Edward Markey.
Right. And then 82 members of the House endorsed it, supported it, and a bunch of senators, a number of whom are running for Congress, namely Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Bernie Sanders. And again, I mean, the only way you can look at this is aspirational, because some of the things that she says are unrealistic, and you Well, you have to scratch your head a little bit, because in 10 years she wants to make the U.S. Carbon neutral, and that just it can't be done. And she wants in 10 years every building retrofitted, and again, that can't be done. The ideas are great. When it gets down to the details, it becomes a little you scratch your head, but you have to look at it as I think the important thing is that she, with the force of her personality and media presence, has finally managed to make this a big issue. That, I think, is what this thing is mostly about. We can pick it apart. I mean, I can easily pick it apart and say, this is wrong and that is wrong. But I think if we focus on that, we're looking at the trees instead of the forest.
Well, I want to point out the 10-year deadline that she's put into the Green New Deal is based on reports from scientists that say, a consensus of scientists that continually every 6 months or so come out with another more dire warning than the one 6 months before that now say we have about 11 years to act in a significant way. Right. By 2030, we really have to have made significant strides in order to avert absolute catastrophe. And so putting a 10-year time frame on it is maybe not realistic, but I can see why she would get there, because we have it's imperative that we do something.
Right, and that's the whole point. I think that is the main point of this whole thing.
One of the things we're going to talk about next show is we're going to talk about Giuliani versus the United States, and we're talking about imagine a court case, if you will. This was on 60 Minutes yesterday, where the people involved have said the White House, the executive branch, won't do anything about climate change. The legislature won't do anything about climate change. The judicial branch has to do something about climate change. So imagine the courts forcing United States businesses, fossil fuel industry in particular, to change to a carbon neutral position that doesn't increase climate change. This is Giuliani versus the United States. They're called the Climate Kids. I believe it's 16 children all around the United States suing the U.S. government, saying the courts have to take over because their lives are at stake.
It is going to, they are the ones that are going to be the losers.
Exactly.
How many people our age have you talked to who say, you know, about climate change? Yeah, I believe it's real, but I don't really care because I'm not going to be around.
That's right.
And you know, it's like they don't care about their children and their grandchildren. We're looking at dramatic sea rise.
This case has been going on 4 years and hasn't been able to throw it out yet. That's the amazing part. This has been, as Klaus said, so this in combination with Alexandria's Green New Deal and, by the way, 80 other congresspeople, it's not just her.
Mike, tell us how easy it is to give money to...
It is so easy to give us Democratic Perspective money. If you'd like to keep us on the air, and not necessarily for this kind of show this morning, but all of our shows, taking them all together, doing all the candidates we do, all of the important people that we interview, you can go to Verde Valley Independent Democrats. .org, and there is a donate button there. You can do that. Please, please, please don't forget to listen to this podcast and all our podcasts on VVID.org. VVID.org is the website you want.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.